At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Babe, did you see that Moto Casino is giving a $1,776,000 worth of prizes?
That's why they're called America's Social Casino, celebrating the birth of America bigger than anyone else.
You can win incredible experiences at NASCAR and F1 races and a grand prize of 1 million sweeps coins.
So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
And welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Big Joe Dubin and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. Hope everybody's doing well out there. Joseph, how are you?
We're back for another day, Robert. I'm feeling really good. It's a code red day out there.
It is a code red day outside.
It's supposed to be 147 degrees at some point today. But, you know, after it gets over 100, does it really matter anymore?
That's my thing. You start getting into the heat index of 104, 106. Does it really make any difference if it gets to 109?
It doesn't, especially when you come into a studio where about 10 minutes ago it was 108, and now it's got down to a cool, crisp 50. So it's well done in here, the climate control that's happening. Nice.
I am surprised sometimes that there's not like a storm cell that just develops in this room, nowhere else, but just in this room with the different cold and hot fronts that come together.
Maybe it's in Rex Road's upper digestive tract where that starts and then moves its way out. But, it's a funny thing at night, and I wrote about this in Main Street Paper a few weeks ago about one of the greatest inventions of all time, at least I think it is, and it should be added to Mount Rushmore, not a person, but whoever, you know, the box fan.
Yeah.
Is the greatest thing of all time because you put that 4 feet in front of your face at night and let it blow. And it's like, well, it might blow hotter. I don't care as long as it's on. So, you know, the fan blowing on you and everything is perfect for this. And that fan for me blows in January and it blows in July.
Consistency. Oh, yeah. Joe Dubin brings to the table.
That's right, man.
Michelle, what's going on? How are you?
Doing great. Oh, I didn't sound on for a second.
But you are.
There we go. Sorry, I had to turn myself up. Doing great this morning, guys, and I can completely agree with the box fan. Best $19.99 I ever spun.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks really, you know, it doesn't really go with my room aesthetic, but it works in my bedroom, and I will never get rid of that thing.
Perfect, and that's what it should be. It just sit there and just, it's more of a friend than anything else, right? So that's it. I discovered the box fan when I lived in Hawaii many, many, many years ago. I couldn't sleep. My brother, we lived on the North Shore, brought a box fan. He's here, put this in your room. And it was like 3 feet from my face. And it started, I was like, we started a beautiful relationship 40 something years ago. And I can't get rid of the box fan.
No.
It's amazing.
Great stuff. And you'll need as many box fans as you can get
right
out there today. It's going to be warm. So,
goodness.
Make sure you pay attention to that. We got some movement in the NFL, Joe Dubin. Finally, I've been waiting to see what happens with Baker Mayfield, and yesterday he ends up officially with the Carolina Panthers. So the Panthers only on the hook for $4.85 million of Mayfield's salary. The Browns will pay him $10.5 million this year for him to not play football for the Cleveland Browns, and Mayfield converted some of his money. I think he ended up giving up about $3.5 million as well to facilitate this whole thing. So Baker Mayfield, now the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers. What do you think of that move for Mayfield? And what do you think of that move for the Panthers with Baker coming in there, presumably to be their quarterback not only of this year but of the future as well?
I wanted to see Matt Corral's reaction when this went down. You know, former Ole Miss quarterback who the Panthers drafted. You know, he had to be just livid. He probably has thoughts coming in, you know, I'll battle through training camp and I'll get that job halfway through. Now he's not going to get it. You know, Mayfield, I remember when he came here, 2 years ago with the Browns, and they absolutely torched the Titans. And yep. He looked so good. And then, you know, all that fell apart up there in Cleveland. I think it's good for the Panthers, but isn't that the place where quarterbacks just go to kind of put out the pasture now? I mean, with Sam, was it Darnold?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I don't know what they're doing. But he's out of Cleveland. Now you got a fresh start in Carolina. So hopefully things go good for Baker Mayfield. Now, somebody said yesterday, like, oh, this has been a done deal for a month. I thought he was going to Seattle.
There was a whole lot of smoke around him maybe ending up in Seattle.
Because they need a quarterback big time. So, but good for the Panthers, and if Matt Rhule can turn him around down there in Carolina. And I don't know, you look at the division they're playing, and you got Tampa Bay, Atlanta, and New Orleans. New Orleans probably going through a rebuild. Atlanta, you know what they have. So Carolina could step up to the plate now and just take on Tampa Bay and kind of win that division.
It's always amazing. And, you know, it's funny because the top two quarterbacks from the 2018 draft are now on the same team. You know, neither one of them got drafted by Carolina, but Baker Mayfield's with Carolina. Sam Darnold presently is with Carolina as well. Those were the top two quarterbacks taken in 2018. It's always amazing to me, like, how these quarterback draft classes work out. We talked yesterday about Trubisky being taken ahead of Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
Pretty incredible. Like, you know, Josh Allen was taken in 2018 as well. He was the third quarterback taken in that draft, and I'd feel pretty good about Josh Allen right now being the best quarterback to end up out of that draft if I were the Buffalo Bills.
And I look back at Josh Allen, you know, coming out of high school, he had one offer, and that was to Wyoming. And they will find you. If you've got talent, they will find you at some point in some place.
Lamar was taken with the last pick in the first round of that draft. I mean,
was it number 32, right?
32, yeah.
That's crazy. That's the whole thing. Go back to any kind of draft. I know the NHL draft is tonight. I mean, it's a 50-50. You hope the guy comes in and makes you proud and does things good. And then other side, you know, you could be stuck with Jamarcus Russell or Ryan Leaf or something like that. And like, oh, my goodness. But in the NFL, it could truly transcend a franchise. But, you know, Baker, are we going to have these awful Baker commercials at Carolina, whatever stadium?
I hope if they do that, I hope there's a commercial of him like packing his stuff up in Cleveland and showing up at the new stadium in Carolina.
Oh, that would
be
fantastic.
There's got to be a transitional commercial if this takes place.
Oh, that would be so good if they did something like that. Those commercials, he lands there, and so I guess Matt Rhule, I mean, now it's like, all right, you got your quarterback now, go out and win some football games. So I'm not sure how solid Matt Rhule's job is in Carolina. We'll see what happens.
He's probably on a little bit of a shaky ground, if I had to guess. Now, I'm interested to see how Baker handles this because, look, obviously his problems are totally different from Deshaun Watson, but Baker's are more about, you know, attitude, maturity. He takes things a little personally. I think that's been fair to say throughout his career. Does this new stop change him, or is he going to be kind of the Baker Mayfield that he's been? Because, look, I think he's got talent. I think a couple of years ago especially, he played really well. Last year he was trying to play through injury, and I think it was a classic example of sometimes trying to tough it out and play through injury, maybe not the right thing to do, and it hurts you at the long run, and I thought that was the case last year.
And wasn't with Odell Beckham's father getting involved?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all that drama. And then here's the best drama, Robert, is that you know who the Panthers play in game one, right?
Oh, yeah.
They play the Browns.
Browns.
You wonder how, like, can you make this up? No, you can't make it up. So they play the Browns, come to Carolina for week one, that game, and that's going to be talked about nonstop.
Oh, yeah.
What goes on there.
Well, and, you know, it's because the quarterback matchup is probably not going to be Deshaun Watson versus Baker Mayfield in that game, and I would guess that at some point here in the next couple of weeks, there's going to be a suspension of some kind for Deshaun Watson. So it's probably going to be Baker Mayfield versus Jacoby Brissett as the starting quarterback for the Browns.
Oh my goodness.
You know Baker is going to want to just eat them alive in that game.
He could hand the ball off to Dante Foreman, too. Former Titan player.
That's
run
right
down the field, who I liked here when he was here. And I thought a really solid running back. But I'm trying to look at the Carolina receivers. There's the one guy that threatened to quit. What was that guy's name?
Well, there's DJ Moore out there who's a really good player.
Right.
So I think he's one of the most underrated guys in the league. But
Robbie Anderson.
I remember that. Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So he's not going to play as Sam Darnold, but maybe his mind changes now. But, you know, what's funny about Carolina, Robbie, is when they came here, You know, Cam Newton came here with him. He did that dance in the end zone 2015, and that lady wrote to the paper about how he's a disgrace and a disaster for football. And I was like, lady, get over yourself for that, man. He's just having a good time. But they had training camp with the Titans in 18 or 19. I mean, Carolina's got a solid fan base. You might not think about that, but there were a lot of Carolina fans that came here for a preseason game that showed up at practice out there. So you might dismiss Carolina as like, ah, Baker's going to go over there to Carolina. Look, they've got a night. What, they've been to what, two Super Bowls?
Yep.
Lost both of them, but that's, you know, to Brady and to Manning, that's not bad.
Yeah.
But that's a nice little landing spot for Baker, and it's kind of out of the spotlight a little bit nationally, and then maybe they could put something together this year.
This kind of makes me question and I guess wonder, what in the world is Seattle doing? Because you've traded Russell Wilson, and your backup plan so far has been, you know, I guess Geno Smith or Drew Locke is your quarterback out there in Seattle. Ooh. Like, you know,
Geno Smith is still in the league?
That's exactly. I mean,
wow.
Well, when that move was made, I was like, well, if you're Pete Carroll at his age, for as long as you've done this, why in the world would you want to sign up for a rebuild of any sort? So I always thought that, you know, there was another plan at quarterback, whether it was Baker or whoever. But I'm looking now, you know, Baker's not available anymore. Pete Carroll's 70 years old. He'd be 71 coming up in September. Like, does he want to sit there for the next year or two with Drew Locke as his quarterback?
It's not like he needs the money.
No.
I'm not a big Pete Carroll fan anyway, because I think he destroyed USC and ran off to Seattle and has been up there for quite a while. Remember, he for those
ran off kind of scot-free, too.
Yeah, he's tried. For those who remember, Pete Carroll was the infamous coach for the Patriots back in the late 90s when they were playing the Jets, and the Jets kicker or somebody missed a field goal, there was an interception, and he did the choking sign on the sideline. And he got blasted for that a long time. Then he goes to USC, and then, of course, you know, Tennessee Vols, you should hate Carroll too, because he bolts to Seattle, Kiffin goes to USC, and leaves your program in a disarray. But I agree with you. I mean, that's a lot that goes in there to look up. But I did not know that Geno Smith was still in the NFL.
Hey, good for him.
Yeah, but absolutely. Well, we're talking about this. I'm sorry, with Tim Hasselbeck one time, because Tim went to camp with the Cardinals and the Giants and other team, and I said, "When is enough is enough?" And Tim had a good point. He's like, "When all 32 teams tell you no thanks."
Yeah, exactly.
Like, great point, Tim.
That's right. Hey, that NFL money still cashes. Doesn't matter where you get it from. No question about it. We're off and running here today.
Yes!
On Robbie and Rex Road. Said it just for Joe today.
Love it, man.
It's his favorite part of the show every single day. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll take more of your thoughts on Baker Mayfield, and could this potentially affect the Titans next year? I want to get Joe's thoughts on the quarterback movement in today's NFL coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Where are we at when it comes to Jimmy G and where he's going to start this season?
Garoppolo had shoulder surgery in March, and the plan all along was for him to start throwing again around this time. We were told late June, early July. So the expectation is he'll be able to get out there and throw and see how healthy he is. Once that happens, the Niners, much like the Browns, are hoping a market forms for Jimmy Garoppolo's services. Now, it gets a little complicated with him because you talk about Carolina and Seattle. The 49ers aren't going to want to trade Jimmy Garoppolo to a division rival, the Seattle Seahawks, so that probably takes them out of the market unless and until he gets cut. Now, the difference between Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo is that Garoppolo's salary is not guaranteed. So the 49ers can cut him and be off the hook, just a couple million dollars in dead money, but they won't have to pay him unless they hold on to him. If he's on their roster week one, then that salary effectively does become guaranteed, $24 million. So look for the Niners, if they can't trade Jimmy Garoppolo by the start of the season, to release him, and then he would be free to sign with anybody, including that division rival team in Seattle.
That was Dan Graziano on the quarterback situation in San Francisco. So Baker Mayfield goes yesterday to Carolina. And now Seattle's still left with Drew Locke and Geno Smith as their quarterbacks at the moment. Jimmy G is out there and technically still a member of the San Francisco 49ers, But as Graziano points out there, they could cut him and not be on the hook for much financially. So at this point, that probably looks like that's going to end up being the most likely option at
some
point.
So every time I hear Jimmy G is talk about something, I go back to a few years ago when a former intern of ours over at Channel 4 saw him at honky-tonking on Broadway, right?
Okay.
And I said, what was it? You know, she's like, oh, my God. I said, what was he doing? All this stuff. She's like, I just got to tell you, he's the most beautiful man on planet Earth. And I started, it's like, oh, yeah, really? She's like, hey, he's tall and he's dark and he's handsome and everything else. And so I got a little jealous of Jimmy G at the time. But I just thought it was funny, her description.
He's a good looking dude.
Yeah, of him. And I just, you know, they just last year just couldn't, you know, I know he beat your beloved Packers.
He did.
And he didn't do anything, but he still was the quarterback. And I thought people was just hating on him so much down in the playoffs and last part of the season with him. But I thought he did okay. I mean, they were winning games.
Look, he's got his moments where he throws some brutal interceptions and he'll miss some wide open guys. So I'm not trying to sit here and act like he's the best quarterback in the world or anything. But he has been to a Super Bowl and an NFC title game.
He has. Yep,
you can do worse than that.
Exactly right, and so I still go back to all the fun when he left New England. There was all that problem allegedly between Brady and him and Belichick, and was Brady jealous of him and what was going on because he was a new kid that was showing up there and all that. So getting the trade to San Francisco is doing just fine. I just Rod Reed, the former TSU football coach, said the best player he's ever seen was when Jimmy G was at Eastern Illinois and just carved up that league.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, you knew then that even though it was an FCS program, his talent was next level and he was going to do that. And so, you know, he's already got one Super Bowl win from the Patriots. Of course, he didn't do anything for the Patriots in 2016 when they beat the Falcons. But, I mean, he's still got a guy that's been through the fire. And so I just think he's okay. He's not the greatest, but he's certainly not the worst.
Well, it leads to kind of a larger discussion because there's been so much quarterback movement in the NFL the last couple of years. I mean, Russell Wilson's in Denver. You got Deshaun Watson in the Cleveland situation. I mean, there's, you know, Baker Mayfield just goes to Carolina. It feels like there's more quarterback movement the last couple of years than there's been in a while in the league. And it gets me thinking about, you know, we have this discussion with Ryan Tannehill. You know, they just drafted Malik Willis, and a part of Tannehill's future that we're not going to know the answer to is, like, how quickly does Malik Willis develop? But to me, Joe, there's also a scenario where maybe Tannehill goes out this year, and given the way the offense looks right now, I think there's a chance that, you know, he doesn't play overly well this year because right now I don't know who he's going to throw the ball to. But there's also a chance that Malik Willis isn't ready next year. So what do you do if you're the Titans? If Tannehill goes out this year and maybe he doesn't play well enough, they don't get to the playoffs, or they get to the playoffs and they're one and done again, and you look around and Malik Willis still isn't ready, you going back with Tannehill again next year, or could there be some more quarterback movement? Like, it used to be just a foregone conclusion. Your quarterback situation just kind of is what it is.
Yeah.
Unless you address it in the draft. And in today's NFL, it's just not really the case anymore. There's quarterback movement all the time.
Maybe you can hopefully tell Logan Woods that, hey, for 1 year, we need you to bridge this gap between Tannehill leaving until Willis gets ready to go. That's a great question because, by the way, you just gave Stillman his content for this afternoon, his show this afternoon, if what happens with Tannehill. What if Tannehill is this monster, crazy, great, wonderful year, but aren't they on the hook next year for like 30-something million as well?
Yeah, I think they can get out of it a little bit easier next year in terms of the dead money, but it's still, I mean, it's a significant amount of money they'll have to spend next year. I can look that up real quick.
Well, maybe he goes out and has a fantastic year and they keep him. I mean, he's, you know, be 33 this year, 34 next year. But that's a question. I mean, we all know the quarterback drives the team. I mean, that's the most important position on the team. And we've seen it when the Titans have gone that way with a quarterback that's, you know, you go back even 10 years with Jake Locker and how bad he was. And then, you know, he transitioned over to Mariota Mettenberger in 2014. Oh, my goodness. And then you go to Mariota, who had the growing pains for a while, still those growing pains. And, you know, and you look at the one quarterback, if you get lucky and draft a Mahomes, then you're set. But Mahomes had a bad year last year anyway, once the pressure got to him. But that's the thing, is that now you got a question with John Robinson going next year where he's like, we want to focus on this year.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
I looked at the Tannehill numbers. If you cut him next year after June 1st, you're on the hook for $9.6 million. but you're saving $27 million at that point. So
nice.
I mean, you compare that to this year. If they cut him pre-June 1st this year, they'd have been on the hook for $57 million. So it's a little bit of a different situation.
Can I get on that hook? Yeah. I'd like to be on that hook.
I would
at
love
some point
to be cut for $57 million.
Right. That's amazing. But, you know, that was what was going. He had to pay the market rate for a quarterback after when he came off the 2019 season, right? When that when he got the big deal the next year?
Oh, yeah.
2020?
Oh, and the thing is, the quarterback market with the TV deals and Amazon and all that stuff coming in, like the quarterbacks are going to continue to go up. I mean, Rodgers is getting paid $50 million a year. Is that absurd Deshaun Watson contract that Cleveland's paying him?
I mean, no, but to go back to Rodgers, what's he making?
It's like $50 million a year.
Okay, but you look at the NBA just handing out those massive contracts for guys we've never heard of.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
So it's like, I can't believe, you know, good for these guys.
Yeah.
Good for them. But you hope when they get these deals that they keep the fire still going. And somebody, I told you, somebody had a great point. It says it's hard to keep that fire going when you're now sleeping on silk sheets.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a great point. I'm like, God, I never thought about it that way. You look at these guys who fought and fought and fought their way to get there, and then they get rewarded with massive contracts. You hope they can keep going with what they're doing. And so that's another problem down the line, which you go, because I go back to Chris Johnson. People are like, well, you know, once you get that contract, you know, he can't. No, he totally, to me, was completely different after he got that deal. I think it was 2010 or 2011 when he got that massive contract. Now he was good to go. Now, I mean, look, Chris Johnson was fantastic the first couple of years he was here, especially the 09 season. Oh, yeah. He ran for 2,000 yards. But I think that 09 season, Fisher handed him the ball during the last three to four games to get that 2,000 yards. He would have broken the record, if you all remember. But his,
it was like a 75-yard holding call that came back, right?
Which was awful. Yeah. Awful call. So you hope they keep the that burning desire to get better the entire time.
Well, and, you know, the Titans have given out some big contracts. I think for the most part recently when they've done that, like, I've not detected any, I guess, slack that's taken place from the other side. Like, Tannehill didn't play well at times last year. I don't think it's because he's got big money. Derrick Henry's got big money. He's played well. You know, they just paid Harold Landry. We'll see what happens on that front. But you can think of a couple examples. Like, Chris Johnson's one that comes to mind. You know, Albert Haynesworth, which is one the Titans didn't pay. He ends up going to Washington, and
we know what
that
happened.
Did not go well for them.
Yep. Yeah, contract year in the franchise tag for Haynesworth in 07 and 08. I mean, he just destroyed people. And
then
he goes up there. He got paid, and it's like, he's like, I'm good now.
Yeah.
You know? And I was looking at Haynesworth's career. He, at some point, he ended up at Tampa, where he had that Liz Frank Taylor injury or whatever with your foot, and I think he went to the Patriots for a little bit and didn't lie. Belichick got mad because he was lazy up there. You should have known that going in that was going to happen. By the way, Harold Landry, and I didn't follow this too closely, but I remember you and Joe talking about it. Did he not show up for the voluntary?
He didn't show up for voluntary. He was there for minicamp, but did not show up for, like, the whole defensive line wasn't there for voluntary stuff.
Wow, I mean, you just got rewarded with a massive deal. You think he'd show
the
up.
The Landry thing was weird. Like, when you get paid that much money, you probably need to show up to the voluntary workouts.
Exactly.
So that was strange, but they're all there in minicamp, and we'll see if they can be as dominant as they were last year. Coming up next, we had a conversation with Willie Donick. Looking ahead to the draft tonight for the Predators, the Philip Forsberg situation still up in the air as well. There's a whole lot going on with the Nashville Predators leading into free agency. And Willie Donick has you covered coming up next. We'll get to that conversation. You can make every day a good old day with the hand crank taste of Blue Bell ice cream. Big Joe was talking earlier about how hot it's been and how hot it's going to be today. There's nothing that goes better with that summer heat than the great taste of Blue Bell ice cream. The good old days are being made right now. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We caught up with Willie Donick from the DDC, of course, play-by-play voice of the Nashville Predators as well on Bally Sports, to talk all things Nashville Predators. It's a busy time for the Predators heading into NHL free agency. Here was that conversation with Willie Donick. Go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Willie Donick of the DDC. Willie, what's going on? How we doing?
Good morning, Robbie. Joe, everything okay in the control room there? Any leaks? Any plumber or clouds?
You know, there's a funny microphone in here that has been borderline assaulting Joe for the last 2 days.
Yeah, we're now in round nine of that. But it's funny, Willie, I told Robbie about that because that was 2011-12 right in there. We had Tim Hasselbeck on the air. And I remember it's like, Willie, just keep talking to Tim. Why mop up the flood and the floor outside? And we were able to keep it on the air and get Tim on the air the entire time. So kudos to you for keeping the straight face during that.
Yep, Tim never knew, and he still talks with us to this day.
So right, good. Win-win.
It all worked out. So, Willie, we discussed the Ryan McDonagh trade earlier. We had Eric Erlandson on from LightningInsider.com. I'm just curious for your thoughts. What do you think McDonagh at this stage of his career brings to the table for the Predators? And I guess how interested are you to see where he plays and who he plays with on defense?
Well, it's a pretty bold move. I think it looks like the Predators were given an opportunity to add a guy with great wisdom, great experience. He's got all of the intangibles, and he's won a ton of games. And I think if nothing else, he is going to provide great leadership and mentorship. Remember, he was the captain of the New York Rangers for a long time, and only because he was traded to the Lightning, who already had their leadership group intact. They were already a pretty darn good team when they got him. That's why he maybe isn't wearing the C for them, but he's a captain type of guy. And so I think it's going to be a great influence, you know, a little, maybe a little different perspective for guys like Jeremy Luzon and Dante Fabro and Alex Carrier. But the key, Robbie, as you said, when you're paying $6.75 million for 4 years to a guy who just turned 33, the question's going to be, you know, what kind of mileage does he have left? Can he give you that top four type of minutes for the next three, four seasons? I think everybody knows that when a guy gets 35, 36, you know, he's not going to be the same as he was when he was 31, 32. So that's one thing. But for the next couple of years, I think the hope is he can be part of a shutdown pairing and be a great influence in, on the younger players and make that D-core even stronger.
Willie, what did this kind of signal to you about how they view Dante Fabro or an Alex Carey? Is it as simple as, man, this guy was available and you can't pass up on a good player? Or is this any type of commentary on the way that they view those two younger guys?
I think they're really happy with the way Alex Carrier has developed. I think Dante Fabro has developed very slowly, but I think it's maybe, I think as they evaluated their team at the end of last season, I think they felt like they wanted a little bit more punch, a little more size, the ability to play and shut down top players, and that Fabro maybe needed to take a step back to take a couple of steps forward. You know, I don't know that Dante Fabro was a top pair guy, but remember, he played almost the entire year with Roman Josi,
yep,
in top pair minutes. So that was great experience for him. But at the same time, I think they feel like maybe they're a little bit stronger with Alex Carrier playing, in theory, with Roman Josi, a little more of a dynamic first pair. And Alex Carrier was part of a shutdown pair with Matthias Ekholm. Now, in theory, maybe you put Ekholm and McDonagh together, and you move Dante Fabro down to being what I would say is one of the highest-level third-pair guys you could have. And you put him with a guy like Jeremy Luzon. I think top to bottom, you're a lot stronger. And I think, too, it helps to have Luzon and or Fabro, guys who have played plenty of minutes in the top four, who could slide up for a part of the season, right, if your guy got hurt for a couple of weeks. So I just think it helps everybody with the depth.
Willie, earlier we were talking about, Robbie had a great question about, you know, with fans, I mean, do you like to make the playoff every year and kind of staying stagnant, or do you hope they don't make the playoffs and maybe get a good draft choice and move up, you know, all that stuff, and then you could, you know, you worry about the cycle of staying, you know, where you are like the Red Wings have been and the Blackhawks, and hopefully get somebody good in the draft. I just pulled up the, I think it's the 1999 NHL draft, and the Preds took a guy, Willie, at number six. And let's talk about, you hope the draft, you could get that great player to come in there. They took a guy named Brian Findley, right? We remember this?
Ah. Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking at his career compared to the other guys taking the first round, and it's that's almost like a Ryan Leaf disaster pick. That was just awful.
It was, and no offense to Brian, but you know, if you look back through any first round and you start reading off the names, especially when you're picking these guys, and you guys, I heard discussing this a little bit yesterday, Joe. When you're picking guys who are just barely turning 18 years old, that's basically the age that the kids get drafted. There's going to be a lot of names that make it, but there's also going to be a lot of names, even in the first round, sometimes in the top part of the first round, that never even make it to the NHL.
Right.
Because so many guys, you know, they haven't finished growing. We don't know what they're going to look like when they're 21, 22, when most of them are going to crack the lineup. And as Robbie pointed out yesterday, you've got those generational players that come through sometimes that are ready to jump right into the league and make noise, like a Connor McDavid or an Austin Matthews or a Nathan MacKinnon. Those guys are out there. This year doesn't look like one of those years necessarily, but you know, you're going to have some busts, and that's why your scouting is so important. It's hard. You're scouting the world, too. You're not just scouting college basketball. You're scouting everywhere where hockey is played. And even Major League Baseball, the Major League Baseball draft's coming up. You're going to have a lot of 18-year-olds drafted in that. But those are all American kids or North American kids. You know, the guys from Puerto Rico and Venezuela and overseas, those guys aren't subject to the draft. Whereas the NHL draft, you have to have literally scouts all around the globe, Russia, Sweden, Finland. You got to know everybody. So there's going to be some mistakes made for sure. And Brian Finley, unfortunately, was one of them.
tell the story again. I know you know better than I do about how they found Pekka. Were they scouting like his teammate, and then somehow something piqued an interest with Pekkarinen because he was not a guy they were looking at? Was that correct?
Yeah, that's a great story. That's one of their greatest stories. You'll love this, Joe, too. Remember Patrick Hornquist? He was the absolute last pick in the draft in the seventh round. He was Mr. Irrelevant. That was in the seventh round. But back when Pekka was getting picked, they had eight rounds, and Pekka was picked in the eighth round, which doesn't even exist anymore. Pekka was the backup goalie for his team in Finland. They had an established goalie at the time who played a long time in the NHL, Nicklas Backstrom. And so when the scouts went over to watch Pekkarinen, everybody there on the team told him, hey, you better get here early, because if you want to watch Pekkarinen, he's only going to be out there for the warm-up. He's not going to play in the game. So they had to make an assessment based on him warming up and just everything that people told him. But they looked at his frame. They talked to people around him. They said, you know, you might have something here. But he's kind of a diamond in the rough because he hasn't played very much. And sure enough, the eighth-round pick turned out to be the franchise goal. He turned out a little bit better than Brian Finley.
Right. He must have been a really impressive warm-up that Pekka threw out there, too. No question about it. Willie Donick on with us here on Robbie and Rexroth. So, Willie, we'll get to the Forsberg part of it here in just a second, but we are a week away from free agency at this point. I mean, they could still look at defense, but I kind of feel like the moves on defense with Ryan McDonagh coming in are probably done for the most part. So what else do you think David Poile and the Predators could be looking at, obviously, outside of the Forsberg situation?
Well, I'd be the first to tell you, I was not a math major at Vanderbilt. I took the easiest math classes I could possibly take. But I've been trying to crunch the salary cap numbers. You know, we all look at Cap Friendly and SpotTrac and try to figure out how much money they have left. The 6.75 for McDonagh takes up a pretty good chunk of their cushion, all the cap space that they've built up the last couple of years by turning the roster over and getting younger. So if you add Forsberg into the mix, I still think there's room to try to address the other big need on the roster, which is the second line, maybe on a wing. But, you know, Robbie, what's the going rate for a good top six forward? Probably $4, $5, $6 million.
For sure.
So to do that, I'm not sure they wouldn't have to move another contract or two to have the ability to go there, right? So I think maybe they would have to make a trade or two to free up the space or actually acquire that type of guy if you budget Forsberg in there. And that's the other big part of the question here is they got to get that done.
Well, to that point, Willie, we're now a week away from free agency beginning in the NHL. And I mean, you've been pretty consistent on this over the past few weeks in terms of, all right, the calendar has flipped to July. Now there's some urgency involved, and we've heard all sorts of reporting over the last week or so from Pierre LeBrun and Elliot Friedman, all these different information that's thrown out there. You still confident that this gets done by this time next week?
I put my official percentage at 73%.
I like it.
So I'm still leaving. I'm still leaving a little room there for Philip to just decide to test the market, but I keep coming back to, again, my C minus math from Vanderbilt. Most of the people are saying the same thing. They're doing it in different ways, Robbie, but I'm sure you read all the reports that I do with Pierre.
Oh, yeah.
And Elliot Friedman, Darren Drager. If the Predators are offering in the low eights, and Darren has thrown out the number 8.25, I think that's a pretty good number to look at. Elliot threw out 8.5. That seems to be what a lot of people are throwing at. That number is going to be anything close to that. A little bit over eight is going to be extremely hard in an eight-year deal to match for another team. A team that can only offer seven on the free market is going to have to get well into the nines, and that's a lot for Philip Forsberg. I'm not saying he wouldn't get it, but also we've talked a lot about the tax brackets. It's much easier. That money goes a lot further in Nashville than it does in virtually any other city that would be looking at Philip Forsberg. So I think that's one of the reasons why the Predators are holding fast and trying to get him to take something as close to eight or a little over eight as possible, because I think every half a million counts, right? Every $250,000 against the cap over a long period of time, that helps add players to a roster that still needs upgrades, right? I think we all know they're trying to get back up and be able to compete with a team like Colorado. They're not going anywhere. Colorado's the champion. They're one of the best teams that's come along in a while. And so to beat them, they've got to make the roster better. So anything that they can save on the Philip Forsberg front would be valuable. So it may be coming down to the wire. And, Robbie, you said, you know, it'd be nice to have it done before the draft starts on Thursday. Most of the personnel is now up in Montreal. But I'm not sure it's going to get done before the first round. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of the draft, you can join Willie Donick, myself, and Chris Mason tomorrow live from Fordyce Center in Bellevue, breaking down draft night in Smashville. The NHL draft taking place first round tomorrow. We'll break down what's going on there and what's next for the Predators as well. Willie, great stuff as always. We'll catch you here in just a few minutes on the DDC.
You got it. And looking forward to working with you, Robbie, on Thursday. Mason and I will be ready to roll, and we'll have some fun.
Absolutely, no question about it. Willie Donick, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can hear him every day from 10 to 2 on the DDC here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Great conversation with Willie Donick. Interesting night coming up tonight between the Preds in the NHL draft. They're scheduled to pick at number 17. We'll see what happens on that front and if there's any trades that take place tonight in the National Hockey League as well. Coming up next, it's time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your submissions, as always, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for the best and worst things in sports. As always, we'll take your submissions on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Robbie Stanley, Big Joe Dubin, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. Michelle, would you like to kick us off with your best and worst things in the world of sports?
I would love to. And I'm going to start with worst, so then we can end on the best, which is always a better note.
Okay.
But my worst in sports, and I've definitely done this one before, but her wife has kind of finally spoken out. Brittany Griner, she is still in a Russian prison. She has been there since February, and there really hasn't been much movement. We've seen kind of some pictures as she's going through, you know, all her court proceedings and everything like that. But I know there's a lot of, like, hashtags, Free Britney, and everybody trying to kind of raise awareness for it so that our government can do whatever they can to try to get her out of there. But pretty scary. She's been there since February, and we are in July right now. So what is that, seven months?
Russia is not a place you want to be right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't even want to be in American
prison.
There's
some crazy stuff going on with the NHL players in Russia, too. Like, there's a goalie from Philadelphia that got arrested the other day that's from Russia.
Yeah.
That got charged with evading military service.
Oh,
man. There's some crazy stuff going on over there right now.
Yes, exactly. So hopefully they figure out something to get her out of there as soon as possible. But I feel like it's going to be a bit longer. And then switching to my best in sports, it's not something specific, but this is always one of my favorite times for the NBA and NBA free agency, just because of all the big names. Well, specifically KD and Kyrie right now, figuring out where they're going to go in these next couple weeks. And I feel like NBA free agency is always the, you know, least expected. I'll wake up one morning and be like, wait, what just happened? So I'm very excited to see where they go. And I just really, really, really hope somehow they do not end up on the Lakers, because that will just make me pissed.
I will give the NBA credit. Like, it's not ever going to dominate like the NFL did this offseason in terms of just the storyline. I mean, it's the NFL. It's its own thing. But the NBA, other than the NFL, probably has the single most dominant offseason in terms of what Michelle said, in terms of, like, just crazy stuff happening out of nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's awesome.
I mean, I'm paying attention, and I don't even watch the NBA, but I love watching these guys get massive deals, and, like, who's next? And then you see somebody like, oh, I never heard of that guy, but good for him.
Wow, he's making $55
million. Or, yeah, you can make $55 million and not even have to play.
That's
it's
right.
Great. Or Russell Westbrook have an awful season and make $47
million. $47
million. Guaranteed next year. Good
and that's
for him.
What Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, is making.
And what does Derrick Henry make, $12
million? Yeah.
Right in there?
Oh, yeah.
Here's another reason.
Good to be Russell Westbrook.
For basketball people.
Has Derrick Henry ever complained about his money? Not once.
I don't think so.
Right? Not one time.
Yeah.
That's why you should love Derrick Henry.
That's right. Big Joe, do you have a best and or worst thing?
All right. We'll do the – I like Michelle. You start with the worst and finish with the best. So two things that happened this past week, just awful. A lot of people don't know that, you know, Hank Goldberg passed away.
Yep.
Right? He was an ESPN for many years, was a handicap expert and of games and all that stuff. He passed away, 82 years old. And I always liked him because he did not – you know, he was a guy that the consultants probably told ESPN, hey, get rid of this old man. And he just stuck to what he was and was just very funny and was really good with his information. And then it came out this week earlier that Demaryius Thomas, researchers say, had CTE. That's just awful. And to me, that's kind of the worst things of sports that go on. Now, this is weird for being a best of the week in sports. I love this crybaby Freddie Freeman drama that goes on. I love this. And, you know, when they went down this, a week and a half ago when the Dodgers went and played the Braves.
Oh, yeah.
And just watching how sad he was of wanting to be in that other dugout. I mean, he would have walked over that other dugout if they'd asked him to come back over there.
Yep.
Right, to do that. And crying about $25 million, whatever it was. You know what? I mean, finally have the say-so. I know he fired his agent, and they're like, well, we didn't, you know, there's all this he said, she said stuff that's going on. But the best of sports, watching this pro athlete just become a giant baby about where he ended up over there, you know, and you took the Dodgers' money, and don't tell us no other reason why, but you took the money, you know, allegedly you didn't know about the deal the Braves are going to give you or whatever. But I just, to me, that was the best of the week of sports, watching this pro athlete who's worth tens of millions of dollars just cry.
I have... You know, we've seen emotional returns or whatnot. I've never seen anything like the Freddie Freeman
this
stuff.
This was like drama, though.
He was like inconsolable
the
weekend. It was unbelievable.
I loved it. I was watching his body language is just something else. And, you know, Braves having fun and celebrating and whatever's going on over there. And there he was just so sad.
And I thought, you know, every time the Braves got a hit, I thought Freeman was going to run off first base and, like, go start high-fiving people. Wait, yeah, good hit, buddy. Way to go.
Oh, man.
Nice job.
And the fact that the Braves haven't really commented on it, we've moved on.
You know what?
It's got to just be the worst feeling in the world for him.
Ugh. It was amazing.
All right, Robert, what about you, buddy?
All right, my best thing in sports, Rafael Nadal. He's won, I believe, 19 matches in a row in major tournaments. He won the Australian Open earlier this year. He won the French Open earlier this year, and he's in the semifinals right now in Wimbledon. He plays tomorrow in the semifinals. I'm really hoping for a Djokovic-Nadal final. That would be awesome. So we'll see if we get that coming up in Wimbledon. But it's pretty amazing. Like, you look around tennis – And think about how long these guys have been doing. I mean, Nadal's 36 years old.
Woo.
I mean, Federer, I think, you know, Djokovic is around 35. Federer is approaching 40 at this point. I know Federer is not playing in this tournament. Federer is 40. He'll be 41 come up in August. But the high level of sustained excellence that these guys have, Nadal has more Grand Slams than anybody. He's at 22. I think Djokovic and Federer are both tied at 20. I still contend the three greatest tennis players of all time are playing right now with Djokovic, Federer, and Nadal.
That's a big statement Robbie.
I think they're the three best ever.
Oh, and better than Borg, Connors, and McEnroe.
Yeah.
I love it.
Better, I think they're better than all of them. And if Nadal wins again, and he wins his third slam of the year at age 36, It's pretty incredible.
You weren't born, obviously, but when Connors in 1990 at 40 years old made a run to the semifinals or maybe the finals of the U.S. Open, and they were like, at 40, he shouldn't be doing this. Yeah. At 40, he should be retired. At 40. And to see him do that, and talk about I had no idea Nadal was 36.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I had no idea. But you look about it, they've been winning for a long time. And I agree. I like your bold statement there with those guys because I grew up with the Borg, the sure. McEnroe and Connors. But this is, record-wise, this is next level watching these guys.
Well, and all doing it at the same time. Like, I think about, and somebody came out with this the other day, like, just imagine if Federer or Nadal played at a time where you didn't have to play against each other and you didn't have to play against Djokovic. Like, they'd win 35 Grand Slams.
Oh, yeah.
Out there. Like, it's incredible what they've been able to do.
You know, we sit there and watch the Djokovic match the other day. He was down 0-2 and rallied back and won three straight. So, we talk about Wimbledon the other day, and, you know, people are like, Wimbledon, I don't know who's playing. People are watching Wimbledon. There's a lot of people still watching Wimbledon.
Oh, no question about it. And my worst thing in sports, it's not necessarily a specific person. It's just probably more to do with me. You know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, Joe, you know, as a young kid, I was really a big fan of Major League Baseball. And I find myself now,
I love it,
as like not much is going on in sports. Like, I've watched maybe 5 pitches of Major League Baseball this year. I just
5 more than I have.
I just don't care.
Yeah, and that's a great point.
It's a sad thing because, I mean, I grew up playing baseball. I love baseball, but I don't know what the game can do now. You know, pace of play, we've talked about a lot. You know, the superstars, you know, there's some great players now in today's game. So I'm not going to say that there's not, but it's just, as I've gotten older, it's been difficult for me to find time to care about watching a Major League Baseball game.
The lead baseball story on ESPN right now is, it's called, "It's a Dying Breed and It Sucks, The Decline of the Starting Pitcher."
Yeah.
So that sums up what you're talking about. Look, for me, I was in the 80s, I was a massive baseball fan. I loved Dale Murphy and the Braves. When they traded him to Philadelphia in 1990, I was kind of done with baseball. But when they canceled the World Series, and then people told me, get over this, Joe, move on, get over yourself, I stopped. In 94, when they canceled the World Series,
a lot of people stopped then.
I was done with baseball. And, I mean, I was a fantasy baseball guy in the 80s. I mean, I remember spending $50 to draft Otis Nixon in 1991 to win my fantasy baseball league and all the kind of crazy stuff. But once they stopped the world, you stopped the World Series because of your greed. I was done, and I have not come back. Now, I'll follow Sonny Gray.
Yeah.
I'll look at David Price, look at Mookie Betts, guys that are local to Nashville, Middle Tennessee. I'll check Robbie Ray. I'll check in on those guys. Overall, I don't give a damn.
Yeah, I think a lot of people fall in line with what you just said. This has been the best and worst things in the world of sports. We'll take your thoughts all show long. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into the NFL. I want to get Joe's thoughts on some of the more intriguing storylines heading into this NFL season with training camp later this month. Hard to believe that it's right around the corner. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025-1063, The Game.
Now I'm looking at baseball stats.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.